Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Same-gender couples unite in Vermont while holy wars rage on, Soho bomber sentenced to 6 life terms, and Scouts' dishonor may be victory in disguise. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Leo Garcia.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 1st, 2000. The first civil unions have been contracted in Vermont, the first of the United States to offer all the state-level benefits and responsibilities of marriage to gay and lesbian couples. At 1 minute after midnight on July 1st, as the new law went into effect, Carolyn Conrad and Kathleen Peterson obtained the first civil union license from Brattleboro Town Clerk Annette Cappy. Outside the town hall, they exchanged vows before Justice of the Peace Hunter Wilson to make it official. They'd only invited 8 people to join them, but a crowd of about 100 gays and lesbians came from around the state to cheer them on, while about a dozen protesters picketed and prayed. Conrad said they hadn't actually intended to be the first in the state, but they wanted to legalize their relationship as soon as possible. Also contracting a civil union on July 1st were Holly Puderbaugh and Lois Farnham, one of the 3 couples who sued the state in the Baker case that led the Vermont Supreme Court to order the legislature to pass the law. Some couples came to Vermont from other states to contract civil unions, even though they can't expect any benefits from them elsewhere without a protracted legal battle.
But within an hour of Conrad and Peterson's civil union, the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church, meeting in Long Beach, California, voted to amend its constitution to explicitly prohibit gay and lesbian union ceremonies. The margin of victory was a slim 3%. To become the law of the 2.5 million member denomination, the ban will have to be ratified by a majority of its 173 regional presbyteries. In 1995, the General Assembly passed a similar ban, but the presbyteries failed to ratify it. In May, the denomination's highest court found that ministers could choose to bless gay and lesbian couples as long as it was clear the ceremony was not a marriage.
The United Methodist Church's General Assembly reaffirmed that denomination's ban on union ceremonies in May, but the issue continues to divide its members as well. July 1st marked the end of the suspension of Chicago's Reverend Gregory Dell, the first minister in the 8.4 million member denomination to be convicted of disobedience for blessing same-gender couples. But while Dell was moving back into his office, new formal complaints were being processed against 2 other ministers on the same charge. In Maine, Bishop Susan Wolf Hassinger announced that Reverend Susan Davenport had admitted to blessing a same-gender couple in 1999, but had asked forgiveness and promised not to do it again. In Nebraska, Bishop of Omaha Joel Martinez confirmed that a complaint had been filed against Reverend Mark Kemling for blessing a gay couple in early June. Kemling said, "I don't believe I've done anything wrong. The church's position regarding homosexuality is unjust and needs to be challenged." Omaha was also where Reverend Jimmy Creech was the subject of 2 church trials for blessing lesbian and gay couples, the first narrowly failing to convict him, the second finding him guilty and stripping him of his credentials.
But in Brazil, a panel of 23 judges upheld a ruling forcing the National Social Security Institute to give gays and lesbians in stable relationships the same public pension benefits as married heterosexuals. Although the agency was forced by an earlier court ruling to begin extending the benefits in June, it has appealed that ruling repeatedly and unsuccessfully. The agency may yet appeal to Brazil's Supreme Court.
And in Spain, Navarro has become the first of the 17 regional governments to allow unmarried couples to adopt, including gay and lesbian couples. The state parliament approved a law that says that couples who enjoy a free and public union in an affectionate relationship independent of sexual orientation can adopt children with the same rights and duties as those couples united in matrimony. 3 other Spanish states allow gays and lesbians to serve as foster parents.
But back in the U.S., a split decision by the Supreme Court affirmed that the Boy Scouts of America can discriminate against gays, even in states where sexual orientation discrimination is prohibited. Although in the past, the court has forced large male civic organizations to accept women, 5 of the 9 justices accepted that it is central to the Scouts' mission to express their moral position against homosexuality, and that forcing them to accept a gay Scoutmaster would interfere with that expression. The other 4 justices rejected the idea that including gays would unduly burden the Scouts. The case began when the Scouts dismissed Eagle Scout James Dale from serving as an assistant Scoutmaster in New Jersey after a newspaper interviewed him in his role as leader of a campus gay group. Dale earlier won his bid for reinstatement in both New Jersey's appeals and Supreme Courts before the U.S. High Court reversed them. Now it remains to be seen if support is withdrawn from Scout troops by states and private groups that ban anti-gay discrimination.
Yet another U.S. Supreme Court ruling involved New Jersey's hate crimes law, but it left intact the idea of stronger sentences for bias-motivated crimes. In another split decision, a majority found that since Charles Apprendi was given a sentence longer than the maximum prescribed for the charges against him, it was as if the hate crimes enhancement were a separate charge. Therefore, those 5 justices believed the bias motivation should have been determined by a jury on the beyond a reasonable doubt standard. Under New Jersey law, it was determined by a judge on the weaker preponderance of evidence standard. New Jersey's governor and attorney general immediately promised to revise the law in the next legislative session. Except for North Carolina and 1 of 2 laws in California, all the other state hate crime laws already require a determination by a jury.
In Britain, David Copeland was found guilty of 3 murders and the bombing of Soho's gay Admiral Duncan pub. Although Copeland freely admitted to setting that bomb and 2 others in April 1999, he had hoped to avoid murder convictions by reason of diminished responsibility, as defense psychiatrists diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. After 4 weeks of trial, the jury readily agreed with the prosecution that Copeland has only a personality disorder and convicted him of the murders. He was immediately sentenced to 6 life terms, 1 for each of the bombs and 1 each for the murders of gays John Light and Nick Moore and of their non-gay friend Andrea Dykes. The first 2 bombs were set in black and Bangladeshi neighborhoods as part of self-identified Nazi Copeland's plan to start a race war. They may have injured more than 50 people. The Soho bomb, Copeland said, was personal because of his hatred of gays. It injured more than 80 people, including several amputations.
In California, Governor Gray Davis signed the first law in the U.S. to prohibit exclusion from juries based on sexual orientation. Several other categories are protected as well, codifying prior legal decisions, but gays and lesbians had never been recognized in this way until a California appeals court ruling earlier this year. Attorneys will be prohibited from using peremptory challenges to remove gays and lesbians from juries based solely on their sexual orientation or on the perception that their orientation alone would indicate bias.
In Australia, a committee of the National Senate gave a favorable recommendation to an anti-genocide bill that includes sexual orientation as a protected category. The sexual orientation clause was opposed by the Christian Democrats and the veterans group Returned in Services League, who viewed it as a thinly veiled attempt to promote the cause of militant homosexuality. The League's submission, in particular, included so many myths, misconceptions, and phony research from the U.S. religious right that both activist Rodney Croom and the bill's sponsor, gay Senator Brian Gregg, compared it to Nazi propaganda against the Jews. The bill moves next to the Attorney General until October.
The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe voted by more than a 2/3 majority to urge its 41 member nations to grant asylum to gay and lesbian refugees from homophobic persecution. The same resolution called on them to give binational gay and lesbian couples the same residency rights as heterosexual couples. The recommendation moves next to the Council of Europe's Council of Ministers.
Azerbaijan has decriminalized private non-commercial intercourse between consenting adult males as part of its bid for membership in the Council of Europe. Under Soviet rule, such acts had been punishable by up to 3 years imprisonment. The law had often been used by corrupt police for extortion against gay men.
And finally, as gay and lesbian pride was celebrated around the world in memory of the June 1969 Stonewall Uprising in New York City, 50,000 people marched in Vienna. The heart of that city is the Ringstrasse, a circular street where traffic is only allowed to move in one direction. But when the pride marchers took over, they went against the usual flow, celebrating their theme, Vienna Goes the Other Way.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 1st, 2000, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Leo Garcia.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled June 28th that the Boy Scouts of America, or BSA, can exclude gays from serving in leadership roles. In a 5-4 split between conservative and liberal justices, the majority found that the Scouts' First Amendment right to express their moral rejection of homosexuality took precedence over New Jersey's law against discrimination in the case of gay Eagle Scout James Dale. In an interview with Planet Out's Matt Alsdorf, Dale told the story of how he went from being a Scout leader to a Scout dissenter.
Well, I started scouting at the age of 8, and that was in the Cub Scouts. I became a Boy Scout at 11, and I was actively involved in scouting from the age of 11 to the age of 18 as a youth member. When I was 18, I was asked to become an assistant scoutmaster. I happily agreed. And then when I was 19, I was expelled from the Boy Scouts when they read an article about me in a newspaper in New Jersey that said that I was speaking at a conference on the needs of gay and lesbian teenagers. That whole thing took place, I'd say, less than a year after I started coming out. It wasn't as though I was trying to hide it from them, but I guess it was just a part of my coming out process I hadn't gotten to yet. Actually, the first letter from the Scouts didn't say anything. And then just said that I didn't meet their standards for leadership. And then the second letter explicitly said, you know, homosexuals are not permitted in the Boy Scouts of America. And then when I found that they were expelling me because I'm gay, it was really just a gut instinct that this was wrong. And I didn't really sort of think about, my God, this might be 10 years of my life. And I don't think anybody knew it would be at that time. I just knew that it was wrong. And to not challenge it would have gone against everything I was taught by the Scouts for 12 years. So to have the Scouts find out one small piece of who I am, and although, you know, my being gay seems to be get a lot of attention, it's really just a small piece of who I am. So for the Boy Scouts to learn one thing about who I am that just sort of expel me was really very painful for me. And I went through a lot of different feelings over the course of the past decade.
The emotions Dale went through accompanied an up-and-down legal battle beginning in 1992. That was 2 years after Dale's dismissal, the year New Jersey's law against discrimination went into effect. Although a trial judge dismissed his lawsuit in the belief that BSA is not a public accommodation, both a state appeals court and the New Jersey Supreme Court found that it is and ruled in Dale's favor. BSA appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Matt Alsdorf was at the April 26th Supreme Court hearing. He described the proceedings to Greg Gordon and Cindy Friedman for this special report on This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
The justices have received, especially in this case, thousands and thousands of pages of legal documents, so they're pretty well versed in the arguments that these lawyers might use. So in a case like this, they don't typically think that they need to sit there and listen with their hands folded nicely to these arguments. They really engage on them, and they did it for both Evan Wolfson, who's Dale's attorney from Lambda Legal Defense Fund, and George Davidson, who was the counsel for the Boy Scouts. Davidson literally got two sentences into his prepared remarks, and the justices interrupted him and jumped in with some very aggressive questioning about what exactly the Boy Scouts policy is with regard to gay and lesbian members and leaders. The policy, incidentally, is not at all clear. It's not written anywhere. It's the Boy Scouts' contention that the oath that you take as a scout and a scout leader to be morally straight implies that you are heterosexual. They think that being gay means you're not morally straight. So a lot of the discussion and argument when Davidson was presenting his case was about how exactly the Boy Scouts would implement that ban and how it actually operates in practice. However, the caveat there is that the justices could very easily decide that the Boy Scouts policy on homosexuality is totally ridiculous, but that it's constitutionally protected, and that as a private organization and as an organization that wants to foster a certain type of morality, that they have every right to hold and disseminate views that the majority of people think are wrong or ridiculous. So you can't infer from the justices' skepticism that they're going to decide against the Boy Scouts.
Matt, in what ways did they challenge Evan Wolfson, and what kind of questions did they ask him?
Well, they were equally aggressive with Wolfson. And with Wolfson, they really went to the heart of his legal reasoning and said, basically, if you win in this case, and if the Boy Scouts have to accept a gay scoutmaster, why wouldn't they have to accept a female scoutmaster? Or why wouldn't a Catholic organization have to accept a Jew? Or why wouldn't a Jewish organization have to accept a Muslim? And they threw out a whole bunch of hypotheticals like that, trying to get Wolfson to distinguish, you know, what makes this case different, what makes this instance different from those other examples. And Wolfson basically said, the difference is that the Boy Scouts' core mission has nothing to do with homosexuality. That the Boy Scouts are an organization that seeks to build character, that seeks to give young men life experiences and leadership skills, and that none of this has to do with being gay or straight. And one of the justices brought up the point, well, then aren't you essentially saying that if the Boy Scouts were more openly anti-gay, or if they made one of their explicit purposes, you know, condemnation of homosexuality, then that would be fine in your view? And Wolfson more or less conceded that point, but he said that's very unlikely that the Boy Scouts would actually do that. But at the end of the day, it wasn't clear how the justices were coming down on Wolfson's distinction between the Boy Scouts having condemnation of homosexuality be a very peripheral part of their purpose, whereas a Catholic organization, clearly the whole point of the organization is Catholicism. But it wasn't clear whether the justices thought that was a valid distinction.
And you mentioned it was the swing justices who were the most active, and the more conservative justices were quite not as active.
Yes, that's true. The Rehnquist and Scalia, who are the court's probably two most reliably conservative voices, didn't have a lot to say to either counsel. They did throw in a couple questions, and it was clear that at least Scalia, I thought, was leaning in favor of the Boy Scouts, which probably comes as a shock to nobody. But Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, was fairly silent throughout. The justices who were really vocal were Ginsburg and Souter and Stevens and O'Connor, and people who are typically the swing voters. And they were aggressive, and they seemed skeptical about both arguments, so it was really hard to tell where these swing voters were swinging.
When the court issued its ruling, swing voters Ginsburg, Souter, and Stevens were joined by Justice Stephen Breyer in the minority, but Justice O'Connor went with the majority in deciding in favor of the Boy Scouts. Chief Justice William Rehnquist wrote for the majority, "It appears that homosexuality has gained greater societal acceptance, but this is scarcely an argument for denying First Amendment protection to those who refuse to accept those views." However, Attorney Wolfson told Matt Alsdorf a week before the decision was announced that no matter what happened, the case could only serve to get even more people to accept those views.
Well, when we brought the case, which really, when we actually formally filed the case, it was 8 years ago, the tone of the questions and the tone of the media in covering the filing was largely along the lines of, why are the gays trying to get into the Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
And in just a few short years of obviously enormous social changes, including the discussion generated by this case and others, particularly the marriage work, when we won the intermediate ruling in 1988, the first time we'd ever defeated the Boy Scouts discriminatory policy in any case, in the Intermediate Appellate Court of New Jersey, the coverage had shifted and was very much along the lines of, why are the Boy Scouts doing this to a guy who's clearly qualified and happens to be gay? And that was just an enormous change in just 6 years. You know, obviously there's a large number of people who don't agree with us legally. That is to say, they believe that this organization should have the quote-unquote right to discriminate.
Right.
But then many of them, and I think even at this point the majority, go on to say, but their discrimination is wrong. And that's a big change in just a few years.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of enormous recognition that gay youth exists, that gay adults are fit to work with kids, that groups that are trying to undermine that inclusion are wrongheaded and boneheaded, whether you agree or disagree on the legalities of it, although, of course, many have agreed with us now on the legalities of it. You know, the extraordinary outpouring of amici support, the Friends of the Court, is just phenomenal. To have over 70 entities, including every civil rights organization, 11 states, 7 cities, all the public health groups, the 4-H Club and others, the NAACP, you know, I mean, all of these groups coming in on the gay, on our side, on support of gay youth, against the Boy Scouts, quote-unquote. That's a very strong statement. You know, win or lose the legal outcome, unless it's a terrible, destructive decision, which is not what we're likely to see, I think.
Yeah.
Win or lose, we have already changed the understanding of society. You know, the way I think of this is, I think it's very hard for anybody now to hear the words Boy Scout without also thinking the word gay.
Yeah.
And to have achieved that is a huge redefinition in people's minds of who gay people are and the fact that gay kids exist, and that means we're winning.
I was also just struck by the fact that, and granted this wasn't really an issue, but that that Davidson didn't spend a whole lot of time even trying to put forth a justification for why it would make any sense to discriminate against gay leaders or gay kids. I mean, he sort of asserted that it's not morally clean, but he didn't try to make any anti-gay arguments. He knew that was going to come across really, really badly, and that's
well, and
like
he didn't right. That's right, and he didn't have them. He didn't know how to articulate them.
Yeah,
I mean, before it would have been taken for granted.
Right.
Now it's almost impossible to articulate.
Yeah,
and you know, you have someone like O'Connor rapping him not once, not twice, but 3 times that he better not be saying that this is about child molestation or anything like that.
Right.
You know, she reached out to take that off the table. You know, that's a really strong statement from Justice O'Connor, who, after all, voted against us in the Hardwick case.
Yeah.
So I really think that this case was a tremendous indicator of the progress and shift and the sea change in attitude, even when it concerns the heart of the matter, you know, gay adults working with kids,
right.
Gay kids being given opportunities, kids being exposed to, you know, gay role models, essentially.
Yeah.
And that was a giant step forward. And whether or not we're able to carry it forward in a very conservative court to the legal technicality quest, you know, I mean, I don't mean to reduce it to a technicality. It's a
right.
very important point. But they may deny us an ultimate legal victory on what they think of as a narrow point.
Right.
And depending on how they write it, we'll see what the impact is. But the social victory of this case, I think, is already irreversible.
Kind of undeniable, yeah.
I think the one thing I can walk away from this from, no matter how the High Court rules, is that we've already won.
James Dale.
I think the kids in scouting realize that this is not an issue. And it's the bureaucrats in Texas, where the organization is run, that are setting this policy and making everybody else listen to it. But I really don't think that's where scouting is. When I was, 8 years old, I didn't join the Cub Scouts because I hate gay people. Kids don't, go camping on a camping trip because they don't like gay people. They do it for other reasons. They do it because they're looking for community, camaraderie, support, and they're looking for an environment where they can feel good about themselves. And that's why people join the Scout. They don't join the Scouts because they don't like gays. I think, interestingly enough, when this whole case started, everybody's like, oh, my God, you can't, a lawsuit against the Boy Scouts, that's impossible. And now, just the way America has come over the past decade, I've just seen public opinion change and everybody say, of course, a gay man should be allowed to be in the Boy Scouts and a gay kid should be allowed to be in the Boy Scouts. You know, to kick them out is, goes against everything that is American. So I think America has learned and come of age that discrimination is wrong against gay people.
And I think that's what's been the most striking achievement of the last few years, and it's really just a few years.
Evan Wolfson.
In which we have really gotten society, and including, as you sat there, you saw the Supreme Court itself, to think and talk about gay people and our lives and our loved ones in a very different way than they did just a few years ago, and to acknowledge our presence everywhere. When you hear the word Boy Scouts now, you hear the word gay. When you hear the word marriage, you hear the word gay. Yeah. That's a major, major change that gives us the opportunity to engage every day in the legislature and in carefully chosen court cases.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's not one or the other. We need to do all of them. And to me, the missing piece is that our movement, the missing piece is that we need a greater degree of cooperation amongst the national movement groups, and as well as state and local, working in partnership to push forward for marriage in all 50 states, to push forward in the rhetoric of equality in every forum, using court cases carefully deployed, designing concrete legislative vehicles that can work in particular states, but always with the same full rhetoric of entitlement and the same patient and persistent engagement of non-gay allies. And to stop undercutting ourselves by pitting as if it were this issue versus that issue, as if it were some zero-sum game,
right.
courts versus legislators. You know, which one do we do? Well, you have to do both. Do we talk to non-gay people, or do we have more debate within our community? You have to do both.
Right.
I mean, these things are false either-ors, and it's really we have such a great opportunity now to advance things really fast, building on the tremendous progress of just the last few years.
In response to their ultimate loss in the courtroom, Lambda's deputy legal director Ruth Harlow called the Boy Scouts' win a hollow Pyrrhic victory, since their success was in convincing five members of the Supreme Court that they are an anti-gay institution. Harlow said, "What has happened here is that the Boy Scouts have fought long and hard for something that has marginalized and diminished their institution." James Dale himself conceded that he was saddened by the decision, but he said, there's a lot of room for hope in where America is going. Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Leo Garcia, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Martin Rice, and Matt Alsdorf contributed program material. Thanks also to Alan Wiley and Planet Out. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and by Query.com at www.queery.com, by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Clout Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on CITR Vancouver, British Columbia, WSMU North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, KAZU Pacific Grove, California, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.